From KCRW, I'm Evan Kleiman, and you're listening to Good Food. What can one say about Nancy Silverton? She is at the peak of her profession, owner of the Osteria Mozza here in town, as well as in Singapore and Los Cabos and Baja, and Pizzeria Mozza plus Kispaka. You might have also indulged in her uber-delicious ice cream, Nancy's Fancy. Nancy is a powerhouse recipe developer who creates engaging cookbooks with recipes that work. Her bread book is legendary, and her recipes are essential because she's a tinkerer in the best way, developing ideas and then playing with them until finally they fulfill her platonic ideal. This obsessive tinkering is at the heart of her new book, The Cookie That Changed My Life. That cookie was made by noted LA baker Roxana Julepot, who owns the bakery Friends and Family. I'll let Nancy tell you the story.
She made a cookie that I was very angry about because it was better than any peanut butter cookie I ever made. And so it challenged me to make a, well, not necessarily a better version, but one that was personalized by me. But okay, let's say a better version. Just for the sake of it.
The bakers in our town have no lack of ego. I will say that.
Right. And I pretend that I don't have an ego and that I'm not competitive, but I can't stand when somebody does something better than me.
Thank you for being so honest. So why did this cookie lead you to the idea of revisiting and retooling classics?
Okay, so I guess what was in the air that was infectious in 2020 was that everybody was baking something, right? And we all know that what were they baking? They were baking sourdough bread. I got COVID, by the way, in 2020, but I didn't get that need to bake a loaf of bread for various reasons.
Mostly because you had been there, done that.
Exactly.
Quite thoroughly.
Exactly. So maybe, but it was what I was experiencing, what everybody else was experiencing, was that we had time, right? I never had time before to do something other than rushing off to the restaurant and tinkering with something there. So I had this cookie, and I thought, this is a great cookie. I need to make it a Nancy Silverton cookie. And that's kind of what I did. And by the way it developed, it's more sort of a cookie tart, right? Because it has a peanut butter center and it has peanuts on top. And so it's kind of a hybrid. But after I made that cookie, I thought to myself, you and I were just talking, Evan, that we have thousands of cookbooks on our shelf. And I love cookbooks and I really love to support people that make them. But in reality, how many more baking books do we need, right? Probably not that many because everybody has their version. And so I thought about what kind of baking book that I would want. And I thought I really would want between the covers was every recipe that I really wanted to make at home. Meaning for me to say, you know what I love making at home, Evan? I love doing croissants. Well, that's a bunch of,
I mean, a bunch of hooey.
Yeah, because who really wants to make a croissant at home when there's so many fantastic bakeries now where you can buy a great croissant, okay? So what I really wanted in the cover between those, in those pages, was recipes that I really did want to make at home, but I wanted to really hone in on every single one of those. So whether it was a lemon bar or a pound cake or a banana bread, really look closely and tweak them in a way that made them really stand apart. And that's, I think, what I did in this book.
One thing I really admire about what you did also is because you have so many close colleagues, other bakers with whom you've had relationships for years and years and who have also written books, there are some recipes where you reached, you knew that to start, that there was someone out there who had already created like the epitome of what whatever that recipe
yes,
was.
Like Claudia Fleming's ginger cake. Nobody, not even me, could top that cake. That cake is a perfect cake. So why not just put it in and say, Claudia already does it, but you should know how to do it.
See, I love that. I love that.
There was a recipe that had been recently published in the New York Times, and I had never seen it before, and it's called a Kentucky butter cake, and it was a cake that won the Pillsbury Bake Off contest in 1967. And it is simply, if you had to make one cake out of that book, just make that.
What I love that you said in the head note was that this cake is a Nancy cake.
Yeah.
And I have to tell you that we have must have the same taste, because that cake is also totally
an Evan cake.
An Evan cake. Yeah. So I want you to describe it.
I think that what makes it so delicious is after it's baked, it's brushed with a butter glaze that kind of has the same effect as a glazed donut. Like, really, what's the best part of a glazed donut is that glaze, or the contrast between that soft donut, right, and then that glaze on the outside. So it's basically a white cake that goes in some sort of a bun cake mold. I chose a beautiful one.
That mold is unbelievably beautiful.
It's a beautiful one. And that's really it. And it's absolutely perfect.
As I was paging through the ingredients list at the beginning of the book, I came across buckwheat flakes. What do you use them for?
They were in, and I never would have used them, by the way. It's an ingredient of what happens to be a gluten-free cracker that this German baker in a tiny town next to where I have a house in Umbria would bake. And they're just addictive crackers. And one of the ingredients is buckwheat flakes. And that's the only reason, that, like I said, it's in the book. I didn't try to be creative and add buckwheat flakes to a chocolate cake or anything like that. And then that's the other thing. I didn't get creative in the book. There's nothing that young tattooed men that love to cook over grills with lots of fire would be interested in, because I didn't do anything creative in this book. If you noticed, you know, nothing became like a yuzu panna cotta, or, you know, it's just what we know and what we want, but just manipulated just ever so slightly that it made a difference. You know, another recipe that I'm really like, if you said to me, what recipe besides the cookie that changed my life, because it got me in that direction, was finally I made a cornbread that I love.
And what you wanted from this cornbread was for it to actually taste like corn.
Yeah. So what I did was this. I thought, okay, you know what? I'm of the school of, if it works, it's okay if you don't make it. So maybe if I've got a can of creamed corn and I added creamed corn to my corn bread, it would make it taste like corn. And
no,
it was awful. It was so awful. And it looked so awful. But I made it anyway, and it tasted so awful. So that was not the answer. And so I kind of put it aside anyway. After many, many, many tries, what I finally did and what I had been doing, because I'm also not a fan of whole corn kernels in my corn muffins or corn bread.
No, you need to break them open you get the milk.
Yeah, exactly. But what I used to do is I would shave them with a Japanese corn shaver, right? But then I would drain it and I would throw away the milk, because it's so thin. My baking side of my brain said you can't add all that liquid to your cornbread, because it'll make it just too dense. And so I would discard it. But I thought, you know what? I'm going to cook that milk. And I heated it up, and it instantly, as soon as it came up to temp, it instantly became a corn pudding. And I folded that into the batter, and I've never seen that before in a recipe. It really tastes like corn.
In the book, you went on kind of a gentle rant about muffins, what they are and what they shouldn't be. Tell us.
Well, that gentle rant was, I think, twofold, and I hope both of them are in the book. One is the size. Like, there's nothing for me more unappetizing than to walk into a bakery or a coffee shop and see these giant muffins on the, you know, it's like supersize. I just don't like that. So one of them is the scale of the muffin. But the other one, I think that a muffin is not a cupcake. I know it's made in the same mold, but a cupcake is something that's eaten later in the day that's sweeter and lighter. But I feel like a muffin is a breakfast item that starts your day, and it should be a little bit more wholesome. So I don't like sweet ones. I like ones that are substantial. And I added a bran one and a blueberry one. And the blueberry one is a take on one of my favorite muffins of all time. Did you ever have Cafe Fanny's millet muffins?
Oh my goodness.
Is that not the best muffin in the world?
A really delicious muffin.
And I thought, now that's a base for a blueberry muffin. And so I added blueberries to it. Not that the millet, that Cafe Fanny's millet muffin wasn't perfect, but it was a great base for blueberry muffins because blueberry muffins is everybody's favorite muffin. But in order to have the right texture and everything, it usually takes a lot of sugar and a lot of white flour. And that just doesn't sound like that's how you want to start your day.
So one of the things that I found so interesting was this technique that you learned, again, I think from Claudia Fleming, for lemon bars.
Yes.
Where you cook to temperature, not to thickness.
Yeah. Yeah. And that was, and you know, that was like the book was probably already being published. And I said, stop. Because I was at a demonstration in Aspen, at an Aspen Food and Wine Classic, well, and Claudia was doing a lemon curd. So my lemon bars, which I tried to do a baked lemon bar and I just couldn't do it. It just, there's something that happens to the oven where it gives, when you bake a lemon bar, it just brings out the egginess and I just can't, that's why I've never liked lemon bars. They're sweet and then they have that weird eggy flavor. So I turned my lemon bars into a lemon curd bar. But anyway, I never ever took the temperature of lemon curd. And I know that I've always had more successes than failures, but every once in a while, if you don't cook it long enough, it doesn't set up right so you can slice it. So Claudia was doing this demonstration, and she cooked her lemon curd to a specific temperature that I don't remember now.
What 182.
I was going to say 180, but 182. And I'm like, wow, that would really help home bakers to know that there is a temperature so you don't have to just give a description of the, you know, consistency.
And I think it helps all humans to take a lead from you, someone who people could arguably say had nothing more to learn. And you are constantly still always learning.
Oh, 100% always learning.
That was famed chef and restaurateur Nancy Silverton. Her latest book updates classic bakes. It's called The Cookie That Changed My Life. Head to kcrw.com/goodfood to get the recipe for her Kentucky butter cake. Yum. Coming up, James Park hasn't gone a day without a dollop of chili crisp in at least 2 years. This is an obsession I can really relate to. He shares his passion for the spicy condiment next.